Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee kurup, guten tag, ciao, wee viva, katbang, half a day, chai chanendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Poor Nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster-bankrupt, bribocratic, corruptocracy-mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, home of Uncle Salmonella, where rotting cadaver is the cuisine of choice for the sophisticated palate. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. For the next hour, your radio, PC, laptop, mobile device, dental fillings, and thought processes will be veganized for your protection. This program is listener-supported. You're a listener. Please support it with a tax-deductible donation at goveganradio.com so that we can continue to purchase broadcast airtime. Well, certainly the top story in national and world news this week has been the disgrace that is the death penalty. I think the name actually trivializes it. Death penalty. I mean, a penalty is when a lineman runs before the ball is snapped to the quarterback, you know, and a referee blows the whistle and throws a flag and there's a 5-yard penalty. Or you have to pay a few dollars extra as a penalty for being late on your credit card payment. But the death penalty, that's a bit more severe. The death penalty is murder by bureaucrat. It is state murder. It is killing by politicians, and all of these supposedly religious politicians in our supposed religious country, yet thou shalt not kill, isn't really taken so seriously, which is pretty dangerous in a system that has become more guilty until proven innocent, in a system that classifies nonviolent animal activists as terrorists with the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act. And in just the brief few legal encounters in which I've been involved or have witnessed, I saw enough corruption to know that people in power are incapable of the responsibility of the death penalty. People's lives cannot be placed in the hands of, well, for example, I mean, I've seen overzealous prosecutors, untruthful testimony from law enforcement officers, just in my piddly free speech animal rights cases in court. Prosecutors and judges are really the last people who should be involved with life and death decisions. I mean, look at the composition of what is the Supreme Court. Yeah, Supreme Court jesters, Supreme Snort. And we were rightfully concerned with the fate of Troy Davis this past week. But why aren't we concerned with the daily death penalty inflicted by politicians? Death penalty suffered by so many innocent people in the bombs that politicians drop on families who are innocent, from the drones, from the helicopters. Where's the death penalty justice there? Why haven't George W. Bush and that Dick Cheney been sentenced to 100,000 death penalties for every innocent victim they killed in Iraq? I mean, we're more certain of their guilt than Troy Davis, and we have video to prove their killing and their presence at the scene of the crime, well documented. So you're against the death penalty, but you still eat meat and dairy? Well, that's a bit contradictory too, don't you think? I mean, every piece of meat, every piece of cheese that you consume is from a totally innocent victim of the death penalty. The only crime they ever committed was to be born. Talk to me about being against the death penalty after you go vegan, after you are no longer one of the executioners of 10 billion wrongful death penalty victims in this country every year. And, I don't know, this country might as well be called the United Dead States, this culture of death and killing, huh? You want to buy shampoo or oven cleaner? Well, just to make sure they're safe, if they splash in your eye, it's the death penalty for animals in experimentation. You want a college education? You want that diploma? No, not without the death penalty and the killing of animals in vivisection labs. I don't know. Sometimes it does seem like the United Dead States. Well, anyway, to counterbalance all this negativity, you know, the barbarism and Neanderthal behavior in Georgia this past week, there's a glimmer of light that comes from the city of West Hollywood. And Go Vegan with Bob Linden joyously announces that the city of West Hollywood has voted to ban fur. Congratulations to the city of West Hollywood on its historic decision to ban the sale of fur garments in a 5-0 vote that came at 1 a.m. This past Tuesday morning, concluding a marathon meeting that began at 6 p.m. on Monday. I attended along with about 200 animal rights activists. And so please take a moment to graciously thank the courageous West Hollywood City Council members. I mean, they're not even vegan. And they, in spite of harsh pressure and objections from the pelt peddlers industry, the local skin-selling stores, and the Chamber of Commerce, voted with conscience and conviction for compassion and kindness over cruelty and greed. A vote such as this, the first of its kind in the country, elevates West Hollywood to the heights of a most special, exemplary American city. I mean, it already has a tradition of anti-cruelty measures, including those related to puppy mills and declawing of cats. And this new ban on fur is precedent-setting and should serve as an example for cities across America and the world. Well, who will be next? Will it be San Francisco to ban fur? Berkeley? Portland? Santa Monica? Let's do it. I mean, this ban shows that a thoughtful representative government body was able to consider the processes of producing fur, trapping, clubbing, confinement, gassing, poisoning, stomping, drowning, anal electrocution, genital electrocution, skinning. Too cruel to be for sale in the city of West Hollywood. The ban covers fur garments, and the date to go into effect is to be determined, although June 30th, 2012, had been suggested by council member John D'Amico, a hero on the council, who took the lead role in the legislation after he was recently elected, largely due to his pro-ban campaign, his anti-fur campaign. Prior to the close of the meeting, the issue of vintage fur was raised without a decision related to it. So please, when contacting city council members to express your appreciation, please express your disapproval of the sale of any vintage fur, no vintage fur loophole. When the animals were tortured and murdered is irrelevant. The fact that they were is what matters. The momentous occasion would not have occurred without the most selfless dedication and determination of animal rights activists, who are my heroes, who are the most noble and wonderful people on earth. Their saintliness was well on display in West Hollywood. As each opponent of the ban spoke, I mean, the stench of their heartless greed poisoned the auditorium with such selfish words as, "Oh, the cash register speaks, and 15% of our sales are fur. We can't give those up." How dare you take away a consumer's right to choose? Well, the heartless just can't prevail in an auditorium packed with animal rights activists who express the truth that the screams of the animals are more important than anything a cash register has to say. And then when it comes to choice, what choice do the animals have in becoming fur? Torture and murder are out of fashion. Fur is dead, and now fur is banned. Thank you, West Hollywood, for putting this nail in the coffin. And thank you to everyone who worked on this extraordinary campaign. You've brought light where there's darkness. You've made the world a better place. There are no greater heroes than those who work to end the suffering of animals. I sincerely thank you. And, you know, for those who, I mean, just if you absolutely, absolutely, absolutely must have that out-of-fashion look of fur, well, you can always just eat another cheeseburger and don't shave to get that fat and hairy look that you get from fur. Fur is only beautiful on the original owner, the animal. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Coming up on today's show, both of my guests will be speaking next weekend at the 12th Annual World Veg Festival in San Francisco at the County Fair Building in Golden Gate Park. That's next Saturday and Sunday, October 1st and 2nd, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. I will MC as usual. I'm also speaking early Sunday morning, 10:30 to noon, in the Garden Club Room about vegan animal liberation activism, potential campaigns, including starting one to abolish meat. We banned plastic bags. Now it's time to abolish something even more harmful. Coming up on today's program, we will hear from Dr. Richard Oppenlander. He has an important new environmental book, Comfortably Unaware. Title kind of reminds me of the old Pink Floyd song, Comfortably Numb. Dr. Oppenlander is coming up. His book has been praised by Dr. Neil Barnard and Jane Goodall. Also coming up, chef, author, TV show host, Miyoko Shinner, who will be preparing vegan cheese for us next weekend at World Veg Fest. For a look at the schedule of speakers, visit worldvegfest.com. T. Colin Campbell will be there, John Robbins, so many wonderful speakers, I just can't name them all. Look at them online there. Please do help us continue to speak out on behalf of animals, improved human health, and environmental sustainability. Well, you probably think that I get paid to produce this, the most important program in the known universe. Well, the reality is that we have to pay radio stations for airtime. We can only do so if you advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services. Contact me. It's Bob at goveganradio.com. And we can cover the costs with your tax-deductible donations. Make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. And please do be my friend on Facebook. Don't ask me why I messed up. And, you know, there are two Bob Linden pages. We'll just have to have, double the fun when you befriend me on Facebook. And for archives and podcasts and to donate online, please visit goveganradio.com. Here's an easy way to create more delicious, healthful, and affordable meals. Visit recipefactory.net, where you can analyze existing recipes or create new ones. Customize to use or avoid specific ingredients, meet your dietary, aesthetic, and budget requirements. Check complete protein, inflammation, and glycemic load. Create food and meal substitutes. Upload your recipe creations and download others. Visit recipefactory.net. Create at recipefactory.net. You'll love Loving Hut, the fastest growing chain of vegan restaurants ever, now with over 200 worldwide. The first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane. Stanford students and faculty have one at 165 University Avenue in Palo Alto. Visit lovinghut.us for the location near you, including three in San Francisco, Oak Ridge Mall in San Jose, and Elk Grove. You'll love Loving Hut. Visit lovinghut.us. It's time for 21st century technology for your nonprofit organization's communications and fundraising. It's time for Mobile Matters. What's the exciting, effective new way to mobilize supporters, raise awareness, solicit donations? Text messaging from Mobile Matters. Visit mobilematters.org or call 212-777-2448. You text, everybody texts. Everybody has a mobile phone. Now you can reach more members and supporters, raise more funds and awareness, and retain greater long-term relationships. Mobile Matters helps nonprofits, schools, universities, political and advocacy groups, professional fundraisers, event planners, and businesses. Mobile Matters on Facebook. Call 212-777-2448, mobilematters.org, or simply text MM to 55678.
We don't eat chickens. We pet chickens.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, listener-supported vegan media infiltration, broadcasting now for over 10 years, as heard on Air America. And this is one of the places where you really find out about the connection of diet and health and environment and compassion for animals. And today, I think we will expand our information with a new book that's getting a lot of attention, a lot of praise from Jane Goodall and Dr. Neil Barnard. My guest is Dr. Richard Openlander, and he is the author of Comfortably Unaware, Global Depletion and Food Choice Responsibility. He is an advocate for sustainability and wellness. And welcome to the program today, Dr. Openlander. How are you?
Well, I'm absolutely fantastic, and thanks so much, Bob, for that introduction and for taking the time for the interview. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you for taking the time to write this book. It looks like it covers a lot of the material that has interested us on this show over the years. Tell us how you came to write this book.
Well, I've been a sustainability and wellness, health and wellness advocate for almost 40 years now, and I felt that there was a pretty good void occurring with what the masses are hearing or what they're becoming aware of or what they're understanding in relationship to food choices. So I felt like I was a good enough choice to go ahead and move into that void. I felt like the book needed to be written, and it does, just as you said. It covers a number of different areas that either were misrepresented or misunderstood, but nevertheless needed to kind of connect all the dots for people.
And what are some of those areas, and how have they been misunderstood?
Of course, I call the subtitle is Global Depletion, terms that I use for categorizing the loss or explaining the loss of our primary resources on Earth, as well as our own health. And as you said, it's still sustainability, but I really thought we needed to hear it from a different direction, and we needed to hear the whole story through an unfiltered lens. For instance, right now, I feel there are two broad categories of messages that everyone's hearing about. One is more of a focused reality by Drs. Barnard and Ornish and Campbell and many others who are covering food choices in our own health admirably well, and then others such as Will Tuttle and Jonathan Fore, even, and Melanie Joyce, and people like that, authors like that, that are covering more of the spiritual aspect of eating animals. But and they're doing a very fine job at it, but I feel that there's a large opening that needs to be connected pretty well with our environment. And at the same time, the other type of message that's being heard, which is unfortunately being heard by what I would call more the masses or the millions and millions of people, are by people such as Michael Pollan and Mark Bittman and Jamie Oliver, even, that are doing a very fine effort at introducing people and bringing out to the forefront high fructose corn syrup, industrialization of foods, even Ted Danson with some of the fish issues. However, I feel that message isn't more of a focused reality. It's more of an incomplete awareness or partial awareness, and it leaves a huge void in terms of. It's basically telling everyone that it's increasing public awareness of all the ill effects of factory farming, and there's been a huge amount of progress in that regard. But at the same time, what they're doing is that they're giving everybody another message that's sort of tagging along insidiously behind it, telling everyone that it's still fine. It's perfectly fine to continue raising and slaughtering and eating, billions and billions of animals. Only now we can do it with pastures and small family farms and our oceans, and we can sort of hide behind this new word, sustainable. That's what the millions and millions of people are hearing, and it's not accurate at all. And so I feel that what people really need to hear is that we're still hurting, our planet and all the animals and ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And their sustainable message with which you disagree has to do with, for example, grass-fed. Is that part of
my book that's out right now explains very well that we're hearing the word sustainable, and it's being applied towards what I would call more of the path of least resistance, which is just what you said. Instead of factory farms, we're all moving away from that and high fructose corn syrup, industrialized foods, but we're moving toward grass-fed operations and toward fish in aquaculture, as well as continued wild-caught fish, which is just starting to use the word sustainable incorrectly.
Right. Well, if you look at both of them, I mean, if we're going to feed hundreds of millions of people, where is all the grass that, you know, that where the animals would graze, and then that would be destructive to the environment anyway? I mean, to have meat in any massive number, you know, how can grass-fed be sustainable? And then with fish farms, then the fish are fed so much fish also, right? I mean, they're so much fish, so many fish are killed to feed the fish on the fish farms.
Well, yeah, splitting those out a little bit more directly, you're exactly right. Let's start in the reverse order that you gave those. In terms of aquaculture or fishing wild-caught fish to feed fish on factory fish farms, 47% of all fish that's consumed worldwide now is from aquaculture, and you're exactly right. 87% of all fish oil that's produced in the world is going to those fish that are produced on fish farms, as well as 53% of all fish meal. You know, over the years, I mean, I've visited just so many different grass-fed operations here and abroad. I just got back from a trip to Europe and UK to understand, you know, their model operations there, and the Pacific Northwest just in the last month. And it's interesting because every single grass-fed operation that I visited, every single one of them, not one of them, believes. I mean, all of them, let's do it this way, all of them believe firmly believe that factory farms are a necessity, because they all know their numbers. They know the ratios of how much what they would call edible food, you know, meat products can be produced off of, you know, per acre, per 5 acres. And just from a land use standpoint alone, it's not sustainable at all. And I explore all those pretty in detailed fashion in my book, and also in my lectures right now, and keep adding to it because things change, you know, as they go along.
Of course, cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes. I mean, to me, it seems like that everything that's wrong with the world comes from our eating animals and animal products.
Well, it does, yeah. And what you're stating there is missed in this message that we're hearing from all these other, you know, these advocates, these other authors, and the people that are in the media. You know, the message we're getting is that you know, this method of agriculture called grass fed and pasture fed and aquaculture, they're sustainable. In fact, they're not sustainable to our earth for a number of reasons, and they're also not sustainable, as we were just discussing, to our own health. And those are some of the points that as I mentioned, I connect the dots in my book, because those are being missed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're talking to Dr. Richard Openlander, and his book is Comfortably Unaware, Global Depletion and Food Choice Responsibility. And depletion is a word that I use regularly. I've often looked at meat and dairy as resource depletion, and that it certainly is, you know, in terms of you know, land, water, you know, and the connection also to climate change.
Yeah, there is. In fact, you know, I guess we're still expounding on your first question about what the book is about and some of these points that are being missed. And you're right, and that comes to mind another large area now. One of them that you just mentioned, another one that you didn't mention quite yet, but that we will. The one that you mentioned, global warming, yeah, I kind of begin the whole book with that because it's something that most of the public is familiar with, you know, since the 2006 report by the United Nations LEAD Committee about, I think it was called the shadow of livestock. You know, most people are more aware anyway of that. They don't pay the correct attention to it, but so that topic is at least in the public eye, you know, here and there. One that isn't, though, that my book covers quite well, that is another one of these sustainability issues, is the loss of biodiversity. And if you had to sum up, you know, all those areas that the book explains or that covers, Covers water scarcity, makes the connection between food choice and water scarcity, agricultural land use inefficiencies that you and I were just discussing, the state of our oceans and fish that we hit on, the sustainability of our own health, and world hunger. But it also covers loss of biodiversity, which are all those other living species on Earth, plants, animals, and insects. And most people really wouldn't make the connection between food choice and the loss of 30,000 species, or at least 50% of those per year, which is really what's happening now from loss of habitat and unsustainable fishing practices in our oceans. It's a very large topic. It's very important.
It is. I've been talking about it for 10 years, and I never get to anything. I just scratch the surface, basically, because it is so all-encompassing. And you're right, a lot of people who write about these issues and talk about them don't really give a complete picture. I'm always frustrated with Al Gore. I mean, Al Gore brought, climate change to our attention, but he just doesn't finish it by giving the solution, which is to go vegan.
Well, right. I mean, there you go, back into the global warming problem. You're exactly right. When I first started writing this book, I mean, I've been writing and lecturing about it for 40 years, as I mentioned. And first of all, I want to mention to you, kudos to you for talking about the biodiversity issue for 10 years, because it's been shoved under the table for a number of reasons. And, these are living species that need a voice. I mean, they can't speak for themselves. And I feel very compelled to make sure that, I do my part to let them be heard. And you're right about Al Gore, but there are ulterior motives there at play. And one of the chapters in my book is called Tread Lightly, and that's exactly what concern I have for the people who are individuals or organizations that seem to have a platform, or clearly have a platform where they are allowed to disseminate information and messages to millions and millions of people, such as Al Gore, and they're especially so since he achieved the Nobel Peace Prize.
I call it the No Tell Please Prize.
That is more appropriate, Bob. That's excellent. I just kind of heard that. That's absolutely excellent. And the key is that we don't really want to say anything too negative, because he's opened the door, certainly, about global warming. But the issue is just what I was mentioning before, is that when I mentioned that about this tagging, this insidious message tagging along with Michael Pollan and Mark Bittman and Jamie Oliver, it's similar to what we're talking about with Al Gore, is because on one hand, he's bringing to light a bit about global warming, and on the other hand, he's focusing the attention on areas that will not correct the problem. In fact, I mentioned quite a bit about this in the book, and also a little bit in my lectures about the Kyoto Protocol and much of what was established in the mid-1990s, and that was actually written into place or acted on in 1997, where their focus of attention with all the countries involved globally is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but they really don't address the major component of it, which is our choice of foods. And with Al Gore, he's tied very clearly into the agricultural industry, with his family and his relatives all being involved in dairy and beef farming. So, and I don't know to what extreme that is right now today, but I know when he wrote the book, that was it. And so his book basically relegated a very small paragraph out of, 400 or 500 pages to making a statement that, oh, by the way, eating a little less meat might help, and that's basically what it was out of the entire book. So, right, that was one of the issues I had too. Tying in your question about how I thought about writing the book is that, when you see this occurring around you in numerous places without the without the true story being told, it's pretty compelling, to make sure that you do your job, what you can, in terms of bringing that to the forefront. And in fact, the first title of the book, I thought the title was going to be called either Oblivious or The Real Inconvenient Truth.
Great. Okay. Well, this book is getting high praise from very influential people. Dr. Neil Barnard, Jane Goodall are all recommending it. It is really important, very important that the truth surface, and it does just that in Comfortably Unaware. So I want to thank you for being with us today, Dr. Richard Openlander, and hopefully have you back again soon.
Well, Bob, thank you so much. And as I said earlier, I want to thank you for all your efforts with this show and elsewhere in creating awareness on behalf of a healthier and more peaceful planet. So my thank you to you. And it'd be my privilege to come back at any point in time. So let's stay in touch.
Great. We'll do that. And we will see you next Sunday at Golden Gate Park between 4 and 5 p.m. Thank you for being with us today, Richard.
Absolutely. Take good care.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Bye now.
I'm a vegan. Because meat hurts animals.
Hello, my name is Bo Rinaldi, and I've been a vegan for 51 years. You might know me as one of the owners of the Blossoming Lotus restaurants, and I'm also a best-selling cookbook author of Vegan Fusion and The Complete Idiot's Guide to Eating Raw. We have a vegan cooking school and travel the world showing people how to thrive on a plant-based lifestyle. We teach owners of spas and hotels, do private chefing for the rich and famous, and virtually everyone we meet about the merits of a locally sourced, made-from-scratch, plant-based diet. We think by using the concepts we show you at www.cookinghealthylessons.com that we can grow our way out of the mess the U.S. and the rest of the world is in. We also have land that we are developing on the beaches of Ecuador, retreats that we give at our eco-resort there, and much more to share, all found at blossominglotus.com. Please support Go Vegan Radio, your local vegan businesses, and organic farmers everywhere as we band together to grow our way to personal freedom, health, and self-empowerment. Please join us at www.blossominglotus.com to learn about all we have to offer.
Do you know the way to eat in San Jose? A special treat, no meat in San Jose. It's Vegetarian House Organic Vegan Restaurant, 520 East Santa Clara Street, downtown San Jose. Vegetarian House, a world-class dining experience since 1994, featuring fine cuisine from around the world. Vietnam, China, Thailand, India, Europe, the Middle East, and the Americas. Made from local organic GMO-free ingredients. Sauces, bean curd, and noodles made in-house. Powered by rooftop solar panels, Vegetarian House, concerned with the environment, compassion for animals, and your health, offers to-go packaging that's biodegradable and compostable. See the extensive menu at vegetarianhouse.us, including appetizers, soup, salad, sandwiches, dazzling desserts, organic fruit and vegetable juices. Vegetarian House, 520 East Santa Clara Street, San Jose. Catering available. Open for weekday lunch specials from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dinner 5 to 9, Saturday and Sunday 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Call 408-292-3798, vegetarianhouse.us.
We got something for you who don't want meat. A natural soy product and a tasty treat. It's tofurkey. That's what I said, tofurkey. There's tofurkey roast deli slices too. They have tofurkey sausage, even jerky to chew. We admit the name is kind of quirky, but once you taste it, you'll love tofurkey, tofurkey. Come on, give it a try. It's tofurkey.
See us at tofurkey.com.
T-O-F-U-R-K-Y, tofurkey.
Wherever quality natural foods are sold.
Still eating meat? How 20th century?
It's Go Vegan with Bob Linden, broadcasting now for over 10 years. Vegan media infiltration. How do we do it? Well, we have to buy the airtime, and we need your support. You can make a tax-deductible donation by making your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California, 94147. We really need your help to pay for the airtime. The animals would gladly pay, but, well, they're off paying with their lives. So we need your support. And for archives and podcasts and to donate online, there are actually over probably close to 400 programs available online at goveganradio.com. And my next guest today is Miyoko Shinner, who is an author, a chef, a natural food developer, and former restaurateur. She's been promoting delicious, healthy vegan cuisine for over 30 years. She was the founder of Now in Zen, a natural food company that made the Unturkey and Hip Whip. And I was a big customer of yours, Miyoko, at that time.
Oh,
yeah, I loved those. They were
thank you.
Delicious. I loved it. Oh, the Hip Whip. Oh, unbelievable. And she also supplied United Airlines with cookies for 10 years. So those of us who were afraid to eat the food on the airline, oh, did we blow it, right? So
yeah, we could have just eaten the cookies. Could have just said, give me more of those low-fat vegan chocolate chip cookies.
I always stay away from the food on the airlines. If they would have said, hey, it's vegan and Miyoko made, I was like, oh, okay, that's different. But I usually ran from the food on the airplane there. And Miyoko is a popular lecturer and teacher. She's associated with the McDougall program. She recently launched a vegan cooking show appropriately named Miyoko's Kitchen. And it is a finalist in the 2011 WAVE Awards. And she's been featured on NPR, World News Tonight, and the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Francisco Examiner, the Washington Post, the New York Post. Ooh, that's kind of a tabloid there. And the Vegetarian Times.
It is, yeah. I don't know what they said about me,
what,
but anyway.
Was it something scandalous or something?
Yeah, no. I think, you know, a lot of that stuff is really from when I was doing Now and Zen, and I was much more actively involved in natural foods and promoting veganism and writing books and lecturing. And
so it wasn't like these cookies were too good to be vegan on the airlines, right? So
that, they might have said that's a compliment, you know. So
right. But you'd see that in the New York Post, like, we don't trust these cookies. They're too good. Miyoko's fourth book will be released in the spring called Say Cheese, Vegan Alternatives That Will Make You Smile. And you can see her next weekend at World Veg Fest at the County Fair Building in Golden Gate Park. She will have a cooking demonstration Sunday at 2:45 in the main auditorium. And welcome to Go Vegan with Bob Linden. Miyoko, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, you've been involved with vegan foods for a long time, over 30 years. What got you interested?
You know, I was actually in Japan, living in Japan at the time that I became a vegan. And there was, you know, I didn't even know what vegan was, but I had been vegetarian. I finally gave up dairy and eggs. Finally learned what I was. I think I had some, I don't know, I was beginning to subscribe to the Vegetarian Times, and the word vegan came up, and I said, that's what I am.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after being a vegetarian since I was a child, I just loved really, really rich foods. I was, you know, eating a lot of cheese and dairy and eggs, and finally figured out that probably wasn't so good to me,
mm-hmm.
or good for me. So I gave it up. I didn't know a lot about, I knew about factory farming, but I didn't make that dairy connection.
I didn't either.
I realized how bad that was at the time.
I stayed what I called vegetarian for a really long time, you know, and I became vegetarian for compassionate reasons and continued to consume dairy and eggs until, you know, it was brought to my attention that, whoa, to really be compassionate, of course I'd have to be vegan.
That's right, yeah. But, you know, a lot of us don't find that out for a long time. So, you know, you do what you can, you do as well as you can with the knowledge that you have.
Right, and that's why we're here now, to give people that, the instant knowledge, so they can go cold on turkey, you know.
That's right, cold on turkey.
Yeah.
Except I preferred it hot, actually, with some gravy on top.
It was good. Didn't it have, it almost had like, was it like a skin?
We shouldn't say these words, but it did. And that's made out of yuba, which is actually real skin. It's the skin that forms on soy milk when you heat it.
Mm-hmm. I remember loving the skin. I hate to say it, because I really think of myself as being so barbaric, you know, when I used to eat the skin from chickens.
I know, but the skin on the unturkey was really crispy and
delicious.
Seasoned well and succulent and tasty, and it was pretty good.
And it was, you know, a guilt-free skin, so why not?
It was a guilt-free skin. You know, and that's my whole point is, you don't really want things to taste exactly like meat or exactly like skin, but you want it to give you the same sense of satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, something
that's a little more succulent or savory might have. And it doesn't have to be, doesn't have to taste like meat, doesn't have to taste like skin.
Yeah. How did you come up with that at the time, the unturkey and hip whip also?
You know, I came up with the unturkey, once again, when I was living in Japan, and I wanted to, the Japanese don't celebrate Thanksgiving, and I wanted to feed my Japanese friends Thanksgiving. And, of course, I wasn't going to cook turkey. They don't even have turkey there. And so I wanted to amuse them, make them something that tasted like turkey. I just sort of came up with it. And yuba is something that's used in Japan. It's been used there for centuries, of course, and I had access to it. And I just sort of came up with it. You know, we were all making gluten from whole wheat flour at the time, making the dough and washing it out. You know, have you ever done that? You wash the gluten out under your faucet, and it's a really strange process. the old-fashioned way. So that's how I did it. And hip whip also I kind of invented when I was living in Japan back in the 1980s. So it was a long time ago.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And recently also I became introduced to yuba. There's a company in the Bay Area, Hodo Soy Beanery.
Oh, they make a great yuba.
Yeah.
I wish they would sell it in more places, but they don't. Now, I make bacon out of that, and it's so easy to do. It's absolutely delicious.
What do you do?
And you just cut up your yuba into little strips, and you toss it with a little bit of soy sauce, nutritional yeast, a few drops of liquid smoke, and then just a dash of maple syrup for that sort of Canadian bacon flavor, and you just toss it all. And then you just saute it on both sides until it's nice and crispy, and it's just like bacon. It makes fabulous BLTs.
Oh, yeah.
My teens make it all the time. Kids love it.
Oh, that's great. So how's the TV show going, Miyoko's Kitchen? How did that come about? What's happening?
It's going really, really well. We're on it's a community media station show. And one of our episodes is a finalist for the WAVE Awards, which is a regional award, covers a bunch of states from Colorado to Hawaii, and it's for excellence in video production. It's either community-based or public television. Mm-hmm. So we feel really, really honored to have been nominated for this award, and we'll find out on October 8th whether we've won it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what I really want to do is take the message, the vegan message, to the mainstream. You know, to let just the average person know that there is this way of eating, that it can taste good, and, you know, it's not scary, that it's accessible and it's easy.
Right, yeah. We're on mainstream radio right now because we want to take our vegan message to people who may not be as familiar with veganism as those who Google it or have been involved with it. So how would you introduce someone to the foods? What would you first suggest they do in exploring a vegan lifestyle?
I try to, with all of my shows or with my cooking, I try to come up with flavors that they sort of understand. So it might be something like stroganoff. That's a flavor that people can understand. And so I try to show them alternatives to the dairy, for example, making cashew cream, which is a really, really rich substitute for heavy cream. And it's every bit as delicious, every bit as rich. And you can use that, for example, in making stroganoff, and nobody misses the cream.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to come up with sort of translations of classic dishes, which makes it easier for mainstream audiences to sort of, get tuned in.
Mm-hmm. Would they find out how to do this through seeing your TV show or what?
Yeah, through my books, through the TV show. You can go to my website, miyoko.com. It's miyoko.com. And that has a link to the shows on YouTube. The books, the cheese book is going to be really, really phenomenal because it's the first cheese book that's coming out that tells you how to make cultured vegan cheeses. So not just, cheeses out of, oil and nutritional yeast, but culturing.
That seems to be my favorite. I sprinkle nutritional yeast and say,
oh, yeah, hey. I love it. I love it too. But hey, why not make a why not make an aged cheddar that you can age for 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
That just gets deeper and more complex in flavor.
Why not?
And it's made out of all whole foods. It's not made out of oil and stabilizers, but it's actually made out of whole foods like nuts and soy.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, we'll have to do a little bit of a tour and tasting together.
Yes. Well, I will be doing cheeses at my demo. I'm doing a talk on the environmental impact of your food choices. along with a cooking demo, and I'll be focusing on some of the cheeses from my cookbook.
Well, your cheeses will be what saves us from global warming, you know, because...
mine and a lot of other people's food. So.
Yeah, well, but you know, if you look at dairy in particular, because cows are the source of methane, which is 70 times worse than carbon in the climate change equation. So really, moving over to alternatives to dairy is really important.
It really, really is. And I did see some chart where it said that cheese was even worse than beef in terms of its global footprint.
Mm-hmm. And then cheese is beef because the cow is eaten after she can't give milk anymore. Cheese is veal. So that's what we learned, you know, when we wanted to become the compassionate vegetarians. We learned that, well, we can't really do dairy because it causes veal. It causes, the baby to be eaten, kidnapped, and the mother to be eaten. So if we're doing anything for compassionate reasons, we have to be vegan. And all the alternatives are there now. You really don't have to want for anything. And so you'll be making cheeses next Sunday then at 2:45?
I will be making cheeses next Sunday at 2:45 at World Veg Fest.
Wonderful. So how does one get a contract for cookies with United Airlines? How did that happen?
Oh, you know, that happened. It was, I don't even remember exactly how it happened, but someone told me that they were looking for a low-fat, diabetic, vegan cookie, dessert for their vegetarian, diabetic meal, all this sort of stuff. And they had an application process. They had a deadline, and so I submitted some samples.
Oh.
And I never expected to hear from them. But I did hear from them, and before 9/11, we were making 10,000 cookies a day.
Wow.
I mean, this was that's
it
a lot of
like
cookies.
It sounds like a Lucy show in the making for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't,
Well, and it wasn't just the cookies. We also made cinnamon rolls for them.
What was that?
We made cinnamon rolls for them as well, too.
Really?
And they were all vegan. They were all low fat. They couldn't have any processed sugar in them. So we were sweetening them with things like brown rice syrup, so low glycemic index, that sort of thing. And that contract, of course, after 9/11, you know, they really, really cut down on the meals. But somehow, even after now, you know, we had the contract for, till a few years ago, really. After we sold Now and Zen, of course, it kind of went away. But
mm-hmm. You had the capacity. You were ready to handle 10,000 cookies a day.
You know, I'll tell you, Bob. I never had the capacity until I actually had to start producing. I can tell you stories that are. I mean, when I first started Now and Zen, we had the restaurant. We started with the restaurant, and I was serving the Unturkey for Thanksgiving. And someone said, you know, you should go down to this trade show called the Natural Foods Expo. I bet you know. So some people would like your turkey. I had no idea what we were getting into. We went down there to L.A. We went to the East Coast one. And in one weekend, I wrote $50,000 in orders for the Unturkey. And I had not a place to produce them, and I had no way to get them over there. But I came back with a stack of orders from all these Whole Food stores back east. And then I had to start scrambling to find a place to produce them, because this was in September or so. And I had to I had like a month and a half to ship. And then I had to convince one of the major natural food distributors to carry it because I had all these orders. And that's how I got into business with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's sort of been the story of my life. It's like, you know, get the contract, figure out how to sell it.
Exactly. We make it up as we go along. So
that's right. That's exactly right.
That's living in the moment, and I suppose. So, okay, well, we have maybe 30 seconds left or so. So is there anything you wanted to mention that we haven't discussed thus far?
Just check out miyoko.com and come down and test my cheeses. Tell me what you think. Just one meal at a time is all you need to do. If you've never gone vegan, just try it for one meal and then add one more.
Well, this is great. I'm really looking forward to the to your cheese demonstration then next week. It's at 2:45 in the main auditorium. And, I talk next Sunday at 10:30 in the morning, which is
I don't know. I don't want to be embarrassed that, like, it's too early and nobody wakes up in time to be there, you know?
Well, they'll be there. It's free until
10:30. It's free until 10:30, so come early. I wish you had a box of cookies from United Airlines. I could, you know, entice people. They'd probably...
Well, just come and have some of my nacho cheese, because we're going to have some of that.
Great. We'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And website again is?
Miyoko.com, MIYOKO.com.
Well, thank you, Miyoko. It's a pleasure to have you here today. I look forward to seeing you at World Veg Festival next weekend. And people can check out the schedule, and that's at worldvegfestival.com. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much, Bob. See you then.
Okay, see ya.
Okay, bye-bye.
Don't want bird flu? Maybe you shouldn't eat birds. A chicken is a bird.
Sweet Lemon Vegan Bistro in Portland is so popular, it's had to expand its seating. Find out for yourself why Sweet Lemon rates such rave reviews for its 100% vegan, Asian, and American fusion creative cuisine. Some dishes found nowhere else. See the menu at sweetlemonveggiebistro.com. Catering trays, vegan cakes, and delivery are available. Sweet Lemon in the Bethany Village Center, 4888 Northwest Bethany Boulevard. Call 503-617-1419. Sweet Lemon Vegan Bistro. The clock is ticking for planet Earth in crisis. Climate change, rising oceans, melting glaciers, deforestation, floods, fires, tornadoes, loss of biodiversity, hunger, disease, poverty. What do we do? Read the new book from Supreme Master Ching Hai, From Crisis to Peace, The Organic Vegan Way is the Answer. She and her organization have been recognized by world, national, and state leaders for their noble dedication to disaster relief. What is the connection between planetary disaster and meat and dairy consumption? Read From Crisis to Peace, The Organic Vegan Way is the Answer, from Supreme Master Ching Hai. What must we ask of our local and global leaders at this time of crisis? What must we ask of ourselves to save the planet? How do we go from crisis to peace? Read From Crisis to Peace. Read it for free at crisistopeace.org. That's crisis, the number 2, peace.org. Read it for free. For more on the environment, compassion for animals, improved human health, and plenty of free vegan cooking lessons, visit suprememastertv.com. Read the new book from Supreme Master Ching Hai at crisistopeace.org.
Here's an easy way to create more delicious, healthful, and affordable meals. Visit recipefactory.net, where you can analyze existing recipes or create new ones, customize to use or avoid specific ingredients, meet your dietary, aesthetic, and budget requirements, check complete protein, inflammation, and glycemic load, create food and meal substitutes, upload your recipe creations, and download others. Visit recipefactory.net. Create at recipefactory.net.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. 80% of antibiotics used in the U.S. are administered to animals on farms, including cows, pigs, chickens, turkeys, and even fish. Widespread use of such antibiotics leads to antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria. The FDA has called this a public health issue of urgency. Go Vegan Radio really needs your financial support now to keep broadcasting. Be my friend on Facebook. It's Bob Linden. Twitter, Go Vegan Radio. And please consider advertising your vegan products. Email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. And for archives and podcasts, and to make that much-needed donation online, it's goveganradio.com. Greetings. Bob Linden here with the Go Vegan Friday feature on Green 960. Don't miss Go Vegan with Bob Linden this Sunday at 3 p.m. My guests will be two of the many notable speakers who will be lecturing next weekend, October 1st and 2nd, at the 12th Annual World Veg Festival Weekend in Golden Gate Park at the County Fair Building, 9th and Lincoln, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. both days. I MC, and I'll be speaking Sunday morning at 10:30 in the Garden Club Room. I'm talking about vegan animal liberation activism and the movement to abolish meat. Hey, if we can ban plastic bags, let's ban something even more harmful. On this week's show, we also celebrate the new ban on fur, just passed by the West Hollywood City Council. My guest this week, Dr. Richard Oppenlander, discusses his important new environmental book, Comfortably Unaware, praised by Jane Goodall and Neil Barnard. Also this week, we talk to vegan food icon Miyoko Shinner, chef, author, host of her own TV show. She'll be showing us how to make vegan cheese next Sunday at Golden Gate Park. Check out the schedule of speakers, including T. Colin Campbell of Forks Over Knives and the China Study, John Robbins, and many more at worldvegfestival.com, a presentation of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. Health expert Dr. Tel Oren speaks at the festival Saturday morning at 10:30. His subject, the truth about protein. He also lectures this Monday at 6 p.m. in San Carlos at a raw food potluck. The subject, Dr. T's best health secrets. For information, go to meetup.com/Table of Life. This Tuesday at 6:30, he lectures in Santa Cruz, The Truth About Protein. Go to meetup.com/ecopolitan-santa-cruz. Dr. T is an expert on gentle, non-surgical, painless removal of skin lesions and irregularities, moles, blemishes, birthmarks. For information, email coulteranna@aol.com. That's coulteranna. @AOL.com. Broadcast of Go Vegan with Bob Linden is made possible in the Bay Area by Vegetarian House Restaurant, world-class vegan organic dining in downtown San Jose at 520 East Santa Clara Street, vegetarianhouse.us, and by Loving Hut Vegan Restaurants with over 200 worldwide, the first one in North America in Milpitas at 516 Barber Lane, in Palo Alto, 165 University Avenue. For the Bay Area location near you, visit lovinghut.us. Be creative cooking. Visit recipefactory.net. That's recipefactory.net. Also, cookinghealthylessons.com. Be my friend on Facebook. It's Bob Linden. We have to buy radio time every week. We can only do it if you make a tax-deductible donation. Make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. For archives and podcasts and to donate online, and we really need it, go to GoVeganRadio.com.